Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology. Here is today's host of Startup Hustle. Today, we're going to be talking about team-powered scaling and just agency growth and scaling in general. Before I introduce today's guest, today's episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Gusto. If you're a startup, this is for you. I want to tell you about Gusto. Gusto built an easier and more affordable way to manage payroll, benefits, and more. They help over 300,000 businesses take the pain out of tasks like automated payroll, tax filing, direct deposit, health insurance admin, 401k, onboarding tools, you name it. Gusto makes it easy. And they really care about the small business owners they work with. Try a 3-month free subscription now. Just sign up at gusto.com/startup hustle to get started. That's gusto.com/startup hustle. And guys, I am actually a user of Gusto. I have been for the last 3 years. So not just reading a sponsor read, I've been on the platform. It's really helped us. I wanted to be more flexible on the move, on the go, handle my payroll from anywhere in the world. And Gusto at that time was a leader and definitely helped me pioneer kind of in my own business how to do that. You know, I was still writing checks to different people using ping pong, using some of these international payment tools and whatever. And Gusto just helped us get organized. So without further ado, Jordan Ross, welcome to the show.
What up? Gusto is... Everyone needs Gusto. It is a lifesaver for the small business owner.
I wouldn't disagree. You know, this is the first hire I ever made. My agency was a CPA, and then bookkeeping help. That's been somewhere that I'm always getting. You know, always been getting help, and it's something that just having that part of your business tidied up and organized, and you can go into one spot and know where everything is. It's just so much peace. For someone like for sure. Me that's a worrier, knowing how to use a system and it's asking you questions, it's like reminding you about stuff. Thank you, Gusto. But talk to me, Jordan. I like getting started in the show early on, people just getting to know Jordan and not just what we do, but sharing a little bit about your journey that's gotten you to here, you know, early entrepreneurial kind of thinking, you know, did you go to school knowing you wanted to be a business owner? Did you start out at an agency? Like, you know, what kind of got you to where you are now? You're in California, right?
LA, baby.
Physically. I love it.
The typical LA thing. I'm not from here, but, you know, hate winter.
Well, you've survived the pandemic in LA, at least. So you're one of the survivors. Yeah. I got a lot of e-commerce friends in LA. So I go down there once in a while, usually for these like crazy events that we would never have in the Midwest. But I go and get a little crazy in LA. And the last one we went to was like Alice in Wonderland, I think, was walking around at our event. It was really cool. But where are you from originally?
From Long Island. And yeah, I'll just drop into the quick overview.
Yeah.
I wanted to acknowledge you. I like how you frame. Tell us like more about the person. I'm super good at giving the business overview, but I'll give the quick spiel. I ended up in the Midwest, so shout out to you and Casey. One of my best friends is in Casey, Adam Tank. That guy runs a mid 8-figure business valued at over 9 figures. So if you ever try to network, the guy's a goat. I love him. I ended up at Ohio State, just wanted big sports and big parties and good school. And when I was a sophomore in college, I saw a presentation from Amazon, knowing at that point in my life, I wanted to build a business, but didn't know how or what. And they pitched it as, if you have big ambitions and you want to manage people at school, this is the place to be. You could manage 100 people at college. I was like, whoa, that's crazy. And Lewis Howes School of Greatness, which was, you know, that was like a big podcast, still a big podcast, but at that time it was like one of the big early up and comers. This is like 2013 timeframe. And he's like, if you want to go build a business, go build skills. So I was like, I'm going to go build ops management skills. I went to Amazon.
Which HQ? Was it Seattle?
I went to Amazon Fulfillment. So I'm in a warehouse.
Okay.
Full Midwest vibes.
In Ohio?
Yeah. So I launched CMH1 at that time in Amazon's history in 2016. It was the large volume fulfillment site in the world. So that was a great place to start. So I'm 21. Within 3 months of launching that building, I got 100 employees. I don't know what I'm doing. I almost get fired 6 months in. I almost get put on a PIP. And my manager alluded to it in January 2017. He looked at me. He's like, if you don't figure this shit out, it's going to be pretty stressful for both of us. And that was because, like, I'm not an operator by nature. My nature is to be, like, if people know Gino Wickman and Traction and EOS, I'm a visionary by nature.
Same.
And I ended up investing, I think, $5,000 because I wasn't getting the development from Amazon. I found the one thing from Gary Keller, which just taught me how to reverse engineer success and simplify on the 20% Pareto's principle that leads to 80% of the results. I figured it out. I worked there for 4 years. I managed over 2,500 employees. When I was 24, I was running an org chart of over 800 individuals in Los Angeles. So I had launched 3 fulfillment centers. And by the time I was done, I was like, I'm an operations genius compared to the rest of the world. That Amazon, just another person. But outside of Amazon, I'm a genius. Yeah, yeah. And I started consulting on the side. My first client ever is an agency. And during that journey, I was trying to figure out, I wanted to be like a Tony Robbins type of person. If you work with Tony Robbins and you're running an 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 figure company, you're doing everything. And I really wanted to do the everything. What I ultimately realized was, I just need to focus on the thing that actually grows these companies, because that's what's going to allow me to grow my business, to grow my influence, to grow my impact.
Because you're going to get referrals. You're going to get people talking about you if you're winning, if you're helping them win.
For sure. So I would say my long-term objective, it's a spiritual one in nature. It's to elevate the collective consciousness. That's a forever objection. I'm never going to do it. Like, that's, I'm never going to hit the, there's no goal to hit. It's just,
you're not going
to
buy the Jets.
Like, yeah. But my business, you know, through my Amazon experience and through consulting, I stumbled into realizing that no one knows how to scale a company, right? I was talking with someone before this call, and they were telling me how they're running a low seven-figure, multi-seven-figure business, and they're trying to figure out middle management. Well, that's Amazon, right? How do you structure the operation? How do you source, hire, onboard, train, manage, sustain, develop, build culture, execute your people? So to date, 8F, my company, we've worked with over 800 agencies and service-based businesses. Of the 800, probably 7 to 750 are agencies. The big focus when we engage with someone, it's consulting, identifying what the constraint is. There are 4 constraints in the business: the amount of leads you get, the amount of sales you close, percentage you close, what your operational capacity is, how many you could onboard and how many you can maintain, and what your LTV is. Your LTV is a function of your price and your churn. So we solved the last 2, and then initially, we holistically started solving a lot of those things, but all my consultants are 8-figure COOs and CEOs that can work for me. We're implementing the Amazonian blueprint. And we start out as a consultant, but because all my consultants are 8-figure talent, a guy who's running a $2, $3, $4, $5, $7 million business, once you solve the problems with us, you now have an advisor that you trust that intimately knows your business better than anyone you're going to ever meet in the marketplace, who has already grown to 20, 30, 50, 80 million. So we end up working with our clients longer term, and that's the objective of the consultancy. It's consulting, the back door's advisory, because everyone needs an outside perspective. I need it. I just dropped $5K yesterday for someone to come in and just look at my business, because Solomon's paradox. It's a psychological principle that states we cannot see our problems as clearly as someone else can, and we cannot solve them as clearly as someone else can. So I spend tens of thousands of dollars every year kind of drinking my own Kool-Aid, so to speak, practicing what I preach. And that's me in a nutshell. I love people. I'm married. I live in the Palisades in Los Angeles. I live on the beach. So just trying to spread good vibes and trying to un-F up the marketplace, because there's a lot of bad education. Shout out to EOS. Very mediocre business solution. I'm sorry if you use them. But I've been coined the EOS doctor, because I was on a call even today, this business running $3 million annually. He's like, we're going to go out of business if I don't unscrew up this thing. So there's a lot of bad education in the marketplace, and the best solution is the Amazon education. Let's just do the Amazon way. So that's my overview.
I love it. Thank you, one, for sharing. I have a lot of follow-up, actually, a lot of good nuggets in there. You know, I built my agency by modeling selling on Amazon and the principles of Amazon. So I've studied Amazon from the outside, like a freak, 13 years in. So, you know, just the way they do everything, the methodology, what dials to turn, what are they caring about? Why is the customer first over the seller? How is the system working on the back end? Like, you know, their process and their order, and do things the right way. You know, it was never the black hat way. It was the white hat way for me. Let me figure out why they're trying to do this. I went to school for systems. And so that made a lot of sense. But we, you know, helping businesses build successful businesses on Amazon helped shape the way I built my agency, you know. And something you said in there, which is like, you know, when people get successful, they now have someone that intimately knows their business that's at the next level. Well, that's so huge, because you said no one knows how to scale. And I can remember going from 3 people to 8 people to 12 people to 8 people to 12 people to 13 people to 9 people. You know, if you're bootstrapping your stuff, you're not just like hiring them on a whim. You know, you're like trying to make stuff work, and you're scaling up, and then you're taking a few steps back, and they're scaling up and taking a few steps back. People get poached. There's so many things that happen. But what I definitely learned that I didn't know was, it's a whole new game at each level. It's a whole new game.
Every level's its own game.
And I think
every level, it's like Mario Party or Mario, right? Like it's Super Mario, but in adulthood. And obviously,
that was my expectations were off. I think as an entrepreneur, like just naive, just doing my thing. I would get to the next level and then be like surprised that, holy shit, I have so much more work to do. And instead of being like, I thought I figured it out. Like, that's what helped me get, you know, in the stupid cliche sayings that are like, what got you here won't get you there. And, you know, what you did to get the hustle you did to like get you to this sales process is not going to build out a sales team. Like, you know, or, you know, the different aspects, like you talked about, how many leads you're getting, what's your close rate, you know, your, what's your churn, what's your lifetime value, how long are you keeping the clients, like how many hours are you spending on them? Do they bring in other leads? Like those things, if you're not an engineer and if you're a visionary, a trailblazer, you know, a thought leader, maybe doing something for other people, and there isn't like a roadmap, you know, there isn't a franchise that you can buy to just repeat it, it can be really, you can feel hopeless a lot, you know.
It's stressful. It's stressful. I think when I got into entrepreneurship, I felt that I knew everything because of Amazon. And I thought, you know, from quitting Amazon, within 12 months, I was running $1 million business. And within 15 months, I was running a $2 million business. And that was my, and then the reality of every day or every quarter is leg day. You're going to the gym, you're doing legs. It's going to burn. It's not going to be fun. But you got to do the work. If you want to get stronger and you get through this, you got to go to the gym. And a lot of people don't want to wake up and go to the gym and get their ass kicked, because you're going to get an ass whooping. That's what the game is. And the second you embrace that is the second you see the game in a whole different way. When you're excited to go to the gym, you're amped up to feel that burn. Cool, we're solving things, we're making things better, let's do this. It's I think it's a really good comparison.
It's keeping the perspective right. It's really and you know, you go through these different phases where the perspective is dialed in, the focus, the why is so clear. Okay, I'm ready to just take an ass whooping. And then there's other times where it's just like, oh, I can't get air, you know. And if you're doing anything for any extended period of time, and you're not just like a quick tech startup that popped up, you know, you're doing something for extended period of time, I don't care who you are, you're going to go through those periods. and scaling can just be, you know, if you know nothing, it's pretty much they're like focused on cash flow and scaling. Like those are the things that that cripple most businesses or keep them from growing or, you know, keep them from being successful. Most businesses go under because of cash flow, and scaling is the hardest thing to do. So I was like, okay, I'm going to make those priorities, like my entire entrepreneurial career, like focus on, okay, scaling people. And, you know, and I've done some things right. And like, I'm an owner operator and that I know how to do all the things that we do at the agency. So, you know, it's easier to lead and, you know, that experience of actually talking about what you know. Some of those things are good. Like I am an Amazon pro. I'm not just an agency pro that gives advice. Like I build my own brands. I've done every position in the company. One of those kinds of guys, right? But at the same time, like not knowing process and organization and not coming from like an Amazon, you know, for 5 years or whatever that teaches you like this. I was a musician that like I'm an artist, you know.
Yeah, you're creative, man. You're making shit.
Yes, exactly. And versus bettering it. And so like, you go into these phases in your business and this is where you need assistance, in my opinion. Like in the same way that I believe people need to hire our agency because we're probably better than anyone you can get in-house out there on the market. And I think we'd go head-to-head with any agency out there in regards to what we do. It's more about who do you want to work with, the personality.
It's the vibes. It's the people.
It's the vibes. You know, with that, I'm like, I'm confident. But there's other areas that it doesn't go like that, you know, and there's all these other areas that you don't understand exactly. Creating SOPs or then, you know, like, so you can hire people to help you with that. Like I hired a company called Scala, give them a little plug on the show. They don't do everything for you, but they come in and it's a lot of heavy lifting on your own team, but you come in and they interview all your employees and they're helping you get infrastructure and hierarchy and, you know, write SOPs for every position and interviewing them and really helping you bring a lot of that organization to life, you know, over a year's time. And like you talked about just dropping $5,000 on, you know, maybe a coach or an audit of your business or, you know, whatever that might be. I've got three at the moment. I've got an M&A coach. It's a year long course. Okay.
Is that Peter Lang?
It's not Peter Lang. It is not, it's called Exit DNA. He's had a bunch of amazing exits that were unorthodox in regards to, not paid just on EBITDA, but got better offers for staff and team and things like that. So some things that just resonated with me. Not necessarily that I'm trying to exit right now, but it's like I want to be ready.
You got to be prepared. You know? It's a 2 to 3 year process if you're going to do it the right way.
Right. It's like getting a trainer. Like you know, I want to be more educated in this area, and I'm spending a lot of my time in other areas, so I need to bring that coach in. Another one would be a sales schema with Dan Englander. Helps you how to really build out an outbound sales process. So a lot of my business is built on referrals, inbound marketing, you know, those kinds of things. And you talk about where the lead's coming from. Well, I've got a coach, right? I've got a coach trying to help me with that, help my team. And the other one has been on the agency side. So it's a little bit different arrangement, but essentially like, someone looking at your business, looking at the things you're dealing with, saying, hey, I've got a template, I've got a roadmap. This is how we did it here before. This is how we've done it, you know, in years past. And it is just like, I can understand why your business has exploded and like, you know, why you guys have had the success you've got, because you can be an amazing Facebook ads guy or amazing creative or amazing Amazon consultant or amazing, photographer and really build an agency built on like a few talented people. But when it comes to actually building an agency, that's something entirely different. It's something in the last few years that we've scaled kind of from that like teen amount of employees to in the 30s has just been
it's a different ball game. Going from 30 to 52 and 50 to 100, it's each level different ball game.
Right, and got to decide: do you like playing startup ball? You know, do you like playing?
I love it all, man.
Yeah, you want to be in the big leagues. You like doing this. You know, where's your passion? I think some of that matters on how big of a team you want to build.
Yeah, I'll tell you, for me, the reason that we got clients, we got 6, 7, 8, and 9-figure clients. I just love the game, the business. So the cool thing, the fundamentals are the same at the 9-figure agencies we go to and the 9-figure companies are they are at the 7. It's the same fundamentals. And let's just use your business as an example.
Please.
30-person business, you need to have a really strong core foundation of your operation, really clear workflow, expectations, end-of-day reporting. A lot of people do not have that. Standard work checklist, data tracking across the business, operations meeting, and then the pin of this is that you're driving ownership in roles. So like operations meetings and your weekly meetings or whatever those meetings are for your team, it should be their reporting out. This allows you to better source, hire, onboard, and train faster. And then you could create a better organizational structure. What's the ratio of clients to pod structure? I don't know if you guys have a pod structure, but that's usually what happens, right? So when you go from 30 to 60, it's really you're just taking the business and it's basically duplicating it, where you have maybe two departments or a series of, if you're doing Amazon growth, right, you might have a pod that each pod could work on 10 accounts, 15, 20 accounts. And then every time we have 10, 15, we bring on a new pod. Eventually, you just have so many pods where you now need senior leadership of pod managers. Each senior leader has 4 pod managers, which has their pods, and that series duplicates where you have a VP, which manages like the 3 pod leaders, which manages the pod managers, which manages the actual pod. And across that full thing, the fundamentals don't change. And that's what people don't get. The only thing that changes is from 30 to 50 to 100, the word is culture. Word is culture. What is culture? And for me, it's this one of my probably most valuable insight in Amazon is what your people say and do when you're not there. How do we influence it? A lot of it is what you do through your operation. Do you have very clear expectations? Do you have those audits? Do you have, but the big ones are, how do you coach, develop, train, do annual reviews and get promotions? A lot of it's, do we have clear values at Amazon? When you get sourced and interviewed, you're getting interviewed with based and graded on Amazon principles. You don't see the grading, but I know the grading. And when you get interviewed, they're going to send you the Amazon principles to study them. When you are giving feedback on the warehouse floor and in your one-on-ones and in your semi and annual reviews, giving feedback based on those values. When you get a promotion, it's because you demonstrate specific values, right? So you're getting rewarded for buying into these concepts. These mental concepts and values create a blueprint. There's so much more, but the nuance of it is there's values and heuristics. Heuristics are simple sets of rules that drive complex sets of behavior. Yeah. At Amazon, and when you're getting trained as a manager, getting trained on a bunch of different micro principles, trust but verify, assume positive intent, seek to understand. These drive behaviors on a micro level. And then you have overarching themes that we are aspiring to be greater than collective, to be the world's most customer-centric company. That's Amazon, right? So the game compounds if you know the data. But the thing that holds it all together is how you drive culture. And for me, going from 30 to 50, 100, the number one important frame, like I have a frame on my eyes, the frame is elite standards.
Mm.
That's the frame of Amazon. That's the thing. Everything is, there's an elite standard of operation. And put simply, we're going to see everything. Just like in sports, if you're going to a stadium to watch any game, if someone messes up, everyone sees it. Why should it be any different in the business? And like a lot of people, especially millennials, Gen Z, people don't want that visibility. They don't want that sauce. They don't right. want it. You need it. In my business, there's an end-of-day report. Everyone sees it. I called out. I replied back to someone. I said, hey, XYZ name, any reason why we didn't send this report? I had an employee hit me back. He said, hey, public call-outs aren't cool. And in that instance, I actually shouldn't have called them out. But I actually said, hey, thanks for the feedback, but public calls are not about making someone feel poorly. It's about insisting on a high standard of performance. And I'm not calling him out. I'm saying, hey, what happened today? And a lot of people can't handle that. That's not being rude. That's just when I played high school basketball.
101.
That's it. Just what happened? And the social pressure creates a high standard. It's the businesses with the highest standards win.
And if you want to get, as an agency, if you want to get the best clients, if you want to get the best reputation, if you want to get the best talent to join your team, the best talent to stay on your team, you have to have those high standards. You know, I recently have taken the place of a director of ads, media buying here, and I'm stepping in in an interim role until we get him in place. And I love doing it because it's really what I got my start doing. Just, you know, PPC,
that kind of stuff. We have a team of four. So the workflow is covered. It's more like the leadership role of it, right? And but just coming in and honestly, like raising a little hell, I'll be honest. Raising a little hell because the standards are below where I would like them to be in regards to just the small things, you know, like the check-ins, communication, you know, adding notes to tasks before you close them out instead of just closing them out. Some of these basic things that happen, you know, in a team. And because, you know, a lot of the mid-management here has been, you know, we're a very encouraging culture. Like, you know, we like support each other. We're very
family. You gotta be encouraging. You can't have high standards without also being
correct.
Loving. You have
but you need both, right? It's like, and so the theme around here lately is like, look, the managers are the ones in trouble if they're covering for the people beneath them, right? And that's your problem because it's holding us all back by people scoring people highly because they don't want to call anyone out or saying they did fine or did great when in reality, you know, the deliverable is not as good as it should be. So going back through that, it's constantly something as you scale and you get different people in different positions insisting on that elite deliverable. That's like, look, I'm trying to be the best agency in space at what we do. There's no space for you here. And I come from a missionary family. I come from like some softies, you know, in just regards to like, you know, just loving people and, you know, not that like I don't have a kernel for a dad or anything like that. But there is a drive to be the best here. And like that's part of our culture is like, look, if we want to keep working on brands that we consider world class and we work with world class
brands. We need to be world class.
We have to be world class. And it's nothing against you personally. There's a bunch of companies you can go work for. A lot of Amazon agencies that accept less than world-class. And I'm sure there's a spot for you there, right? You know, but for us here, like, you know, just what you want that culture to be is, you know, we want to be elite. We want to be world-class. So that's really, you know, that's something that we're working on. I feel like we have an amazing team members. It's really just figuring out how to get those like drill sergeants, I guess, a little bit, those mid managers that are just really passing down the culture from the C-suite to
That's the key. I know we were talking beforehand, like how we build that middle management process. It's tough. I think a lot of people from a managerial perspective, we talk about the avatar and the ICP of our prospect. One of the most important components is also mapping out your ICP and avatar for your roles that you're hiring. Yeah. The talent funnel. I'm curious for you, have you guys, or this is something you're working through, I'm happy to workshop in real time. How have you guys found the process of building that middle management team?
So I feel like we are maybe for the first time in a long time, have some real people here that I'm excited about. And I don't just mean, I mean for mid-management. Okay. I've had great doers. I just mean like, I'm always hoping for the best. I believe in the talent and potential of people. And I'm, you know, but these, like, I've got some rock stars right now that I'm just like, wow, maybe it is possible to duplicate some of these rock stars. I've had rock stars come and go too in our industry. It's a booming industry. So, you know, a New York agency can come and offer 50K more and take a person. I understand that. And you can't hold anyone back to that, right? You got to figure out ways to keep people, incentivize them and get buy-in. But for me, and I honestly thought for the longest time, I needed to keep stuff central to Kansas City. I was like, we're just such a team. We collaborate. The communication that has to happen. We're brand builders. Like, you know, we got to be in a similar space. And we had some remote, but it wasn't like the majority of our team. And what I've actually found is I've just found a couple amazing people. One leading our SEO team in Colombia. She's just really stepped up. Like, you can just tell when some people have the ability to lead others, you know. And then we found a couple more talented people actually in Eastern Europe. So I went outside of my like what I thought I needed, number one, and found people like that I just didn't believe I would find in those places. Not just because I'm like
Eastern Europe's a lot of good talent. We got a lot of good. We've had a lot. We have a resource. We refer to our clients to them, and they refer a lot of great talent to our clients in the Carpathian region. I think that's Albania, maybe
Serbia.
Serbia, maybe. Yeah, that sounds more like it.
We might even be using the same resource. Who knows? But is definitely a talent agency. You know, and that's how I found traveling the world too. It allowed me to be in some of these places and be like, wow, there's like some great, like Colombia. I just saw the design and art and culture in there. And, you know, they're also our same time zone. And when it comes to like just being on the same page with my team, like here, it was just like an immediate fit. And so you talk about how that's been going. For me, I feel like we're finding some success and I'm pumped. Like it's got me hyped up about it. Good. Just seeing the potential and also seeing like what I'm refusing to settle for. I think that's where I'm kind of hitting, like turning a new leaf is like, we've had some people in positions, some of it just by opportunity, sometimes just like what's happening, find ourselves like, you know, in this position I'm in, my director of ads, and just being like, you know, we had good, I want great. And whether that's the person or the fit or the timing, you know, there's a whole bunch of different things at play. But if we want to be elite, we have to hire elite people. I definitely believe in getting the right people in the right spots is like really important. But when you find people that just care, it's almost like the professional curiosity piece, or people that just care, is like, you don't really need to be working with them that long to figure that part out. And I don't know how Amazon did that, how they like, you know, during the interview process or whatever. But my mentor told me one time, like, you know, how many times have you hired someone in the first couple of weeks, like didn't think they were going to be great, and then they just turned out to be amazing? And you might be the exception because of your boss telling you if you didn't figure this out, you're gone, right? But in general, I would say, yeah, you know, Matt, you're pretty right. Like usually I know within, whether someone has all the knowledge or not, I know within the first few weeks if they're going to be great, like if they're going to turn out to be great. And I think it's just like, what are we willing to accept? I think for the longest time, my agency, I was just excited to have somebody working here, like somebody like building this dream with us, like, you know, believing in what we're doing and being like, oh my God, they bought into what we're doing. They're proud. This is a great fit for us. And now it's kind of, I feel like we're at that next level where I'm like, okay, I can't just be the threshold can't just be that they're willing to work with us and be part of our team. It's that, you know, I need elite. I need that professional curiosity, obsession, in the things that they do. So that was a long-winded answer. But like when I think about just, you know, how that's working for us and trying to pass along to anyone listening, like kind of what that thought development has been like for me, it has been having people, it's almost like you don't know what you don't know. And then you get somebody, it's like, you know, you're dating a girl, you think you're in a good relationship, you know, and then something happens, it ends, and you meet somebody else that you're just like, wow, how was I ever like in that relationship for so long when there's something like this out there, you know? And some of it's probably us as a team growing so that when we come to that next position, we're ready. Well, yeah, I feel like that's where we're at. That's going to be the key to Marknology exploding into, you know, into the next few years.
Good. Keep it coming.
Yeah, there's not a, I don't know if you've worked with any agencies in the Amazon space.
Many. Yeah. You might know some of them. He's not a big brand, a good friend of mine, Trivium agency based in LA.
Mina Elias.
Mina's a homie. We used to work out at Gold's Gym together a bunch.
That's who I was referring to when I said I got homies in LA. So.
Oh, Mina. I love Mina.
Yeah. He's in Dubai right now, you know, doing weddings.
About to get married. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't go there. Too many rules for me. So, but no, he's an absolute beast, and seeing what he's doing with Trivium, like if you had any hand in that, like just seeing him actually explode and get organized and everything has been awesome.
Mina's a sicko, and I don't think for anyone, that guy is not a normal human. Like there's nothing normal about him. We worked out together for a period of months, and I loved it because he's one of those guys that his pace, his intensity every day, his focus is, there are few, like that guy's significant eight-figure talent. He just hasn't built it yet, but most people aren't like Mina.
His like default that. Setting is engineer as well. He was an engineer before he built an agency. So what I mean by that is like, you can be a creative and build an agency, right? Or you can be an engineer and build an agency. There's different like kind of defaults, like, you know, whether you're a visionary or whether you're a process person or whatever. And so it's different. Maybe the marketing's harder for the engineer type or whatever, but like that system, that process, that like, this is what I need to do to reverse engineer my solution is, you know, I just like to watch him work. I like to watch him work. We've done booths together. We speak together. We do collabs because he focuses on the PPC side and kind of like the branding content side. So we mash up pretty good. Cool. Good one to reference, by the way. I think he might be the only one I know of in LA, but.
We just onboarded Rob Wiltsy. He's with Video. Him and Mina brought, so we had an event last month, 2 months ago in October. And Mina brought a bunch of Amazon people. Video Fresh, Rob Wiltsy. You guys are comparable in size.
Probably need to meet him.
Friend of Mina. I mean, feel like Mina knows everyone, right?
Our industry is really small. So the Amazon industry is just like, it's pretty small in regards to like, not just number of agencies, but like there's people that own companies that never get out, never speak in the community, never aren't involved in anything either. So you're never going to see them. But the ones that do, it's just, you know, it's a pretty small community. So it's good. It, like you said, if you do elite work, then you're going to have people talking about your work and, you know, you get what you want. I got a couple questions for you, a little bit more pointed. Before we do, want to know what fellow founders say about Gusto. They say they now think of payroll as a 30-second job, that the website is friendly and a joy to use, and that Gusto has the best support team. Whenever something comes up, you can reach out, and literally less than 24 hours later, it's handled. Smart technology and friendly humans, that's pretty cool. I've actually been a client for 3+ years, guys. That's what I was saying. I love Gusto. Right now, our listeners get 3 free months when they go to gusto.com/startup hustle. Yep, 3 months of payroll, benefits, admin, and more, totally free. That's gusto.com/startup hustle, or just click the link in the show notes. So you talked about, like, you know, principles being the same for 6-figure agency, 7-figure agency, 8-figure agency. And, you know, something about business, whether I'm in real estate and property management, running Airbnbs or running e-commerce projects, like you start to just like see things, you see business. Like that's why someone can say they're a businessman. I believe that that's an actual thing now because you just understand business. But talk to me, if you could, about, you know, what you see as like common things that like a 6-figure agency should be focused on. Versus the 7-figure versus the 8-figure. Like, do the priorities change in regards to like what your primary focus should be?
But yes, the priorities do change because business is a game of compounding, right? So let's just do a 6 versus a high 7-figure agency or a mid 7-figure agency. At 6 figures, the focus needs to be building the right foundation. How do you have the right workflow? How do you execute? How do you deliver, hold expectations, audit, you know, just super basic source, hire, onboard, train, funnel, close deals. Like, it's really, do I have the fundamentals to get to 7 figures, right? At 7 figures, you have a little bit more cash to play with that. Now, of a business, where, let's just say that business we're doing 2.5, 3 million. The difference being that now that you have those fundamentals, you have to keep executing those fundamentals. That's number one. But when you're looking at a business that does execute for their clients, right? So let's say it's an Amazon agency like Mina's. Let's say they keep delivering results, but they lose someone. Well, why do they lose someone, right? And the focus isn't fundamentals at that point. The focus is psychology. That's kind of elite level shit now we're talking. So what... there's an equation that we work with our clients on. It's the MRR cap, monthly recurring revenue cap. And for any of you that have been plateaued or are plateaued, take out your pens and pencils because this is the equation. The amount of new deals you bring on per month multiplied by the average price per subscription retainer divided by monthly churn. That will give you your cap. I think my templated example of this, and I'll actually do it in real time. Let's say you're bringing on 12 clients a month, multiply that by an average retainer size of 2,000, and you divide that by a churn rate of 12%. Your business will cap it at 200K per month. Churn is calculated by getting the amount of clients you lose in a month, or the average amount of clients you lose per month, divided by the amount of clients you had at the start of that month. That's churn. Now, with that equation, your goal is to figure out which of these three variables can I change that will grow my business. So in the example I gave, 12 clients, 2K per month, 12% churn. And the question then becomes that you talk about priorities. At six figures, it's fundamentals. At seven figures, at this business now, we're doing 2.5 million roughly annually. This business might be like, I'm not sure what the right strategy is going into 2024. How the heck do I get from 2.5 to 4 million, right? Or 200K per month to 400K? How do I double? Let's do the math. Okay, 12 client. This person might say, I think I could get from 12 clients to 14 clients. I think I could reasonably do that. And they could look at the numbers, right? If you look at how many, it's either a function of leads or sales. But let's just say, without going into the numbers, they think reasonably they could do 14. They keep their price the same at 2K. And then you divide that number by 0.12%. The business will cap out at 233,000. Cool. Two more deals a month will compound you to get to an average 33K per month more. They say, okay, that's something I could do that will grow my business by 33K. But when I look at this business as me, I say, hey, like your churn at 12% a month, that's like, you're very far off. We need to cut that down to at least 8%. We don't want to churn more than your entire business in a year. Let's get down to 8%. I would say 8% is because a minimum.
Is it right? 8% or 8 times 12, right?
Yeah, 8.3 multiplied by 12 is going to get you 100. You're still going to churn 100% of your business, which is horrible. But from 12% to 8%, at 12% churn per month, there's like
step
things
in the right
that are
direction.
Broken.
Right.
Yeah. So same equation, 12 clients per month times 2,000 divided by 0.08. This one's going to blow everyone's mind, 300K per month. They don't change the price. They don't. Bring
they get better
out
at services. They get better at relationship. They get better at.
But then that's the thing. Well, why is it 12%? And this is what people. This is where people get lost. What is the truth? And this is at Amazon. This is operational thing. What's the root cause of the reason we're at 12%? So there's a process. It's called a fishbone diagram, where you take the issue and then you break it down into all the different types. If you think about a fishbone, it breaks down to multiple things. Is it process related? Is it people related? Is it environment related? Is it psychologically related? And then you start to make a SWOT list. These are all the things that are probably relating or correlating to 12% churn. Then we have to Pareto's principle. What are the things, if we were only to solve two or three of them, that would probably correlate to better retention? Then you start bringing those. And that's when you bringing someone from the outside saying, hey, I looked at your process. These are probably the top five we should be working on now. And that's the game. The game of business, the priority is once you have the fundamentals, you need to keep doing the fundamentals, but then you need to figure out what to do better and what to do more of, or what to build into. The priorities don't really change. It's the strategy of compounding does, because same thing. Now that we're at 12 deals per month, $2,000 per deal, 8% churn, this person might bring a consultant and they'll look at the numbers and they'll be like, hey, you're booking at 12%, let's just say, 12%, they close 18% of their deals. So they're booking 66 calls per month and they're only closing 18%. I might look and be like, yo, that could easily be 25%.
Let's work on our proposals. Let's work on our pricing. Let's work on our offer.
Yeah. So now if we move that from 18% closing to 25% closing rate, that brings us up to 16 of the deal. So 16 times 2,000 is 32,000 divided by 0.08. Now this business is doing 400,000 a month, and that's how you double. The game of business is it starts with the data. And at Amazon, it always starts with the data. And then you have to extrapolate back to the root cause or what you can do more of and do better or build a new process in, and then maintain that, keep running it through audits and processes and standard work and end of day reporting, make sure you're doing it. And then you have to compound on it. So that's the difference of six versus, in this example, moving from 200K per month to 400K per month. It's what's the data telling us that we need to focus on next.
Because
in this instance, that I doubled this business, in theory, bring on four deals extra per month and reducing churn by 4%. That doesn't feel like I just did a lot numbers-wise, right? So that's the game. That's the game we got to play.
I love that. And thank you for breaking that down, because that's exactly what we do for Amazon businesses. You know, I'm looking at return rate. I'm looking at a percentage of sale for the shipment costs for warehousing, right? I'm looking at I'm looking at defected products. I'm looking at, you know, versus stuff getting checked in. I'm looking at price points. So if it's 2000, does it need to be 2100, you know, to get us the margin that we need? What about the cost of goods? What's it costing me to get that labor or that good? Okay, now we have advertising and marketing. Does that need to be clean? Do we need to improve that by 5% here and 10% here? And this is something that when people are dealing with a personal budget, I give a lot of people advice on personal budgets, just employees, friends. Seems like it's something that everybody needs help with, you know, and it's just, you know, times are hard. But I'm giving a lot of, you know, trying to just give simple advice to help people at times. And a lot of it is like, look, it's not just about going and getting that raise at work. It's about cutting. It's what are ways you can supplement your income or, you know, and what are ways that you can cut back at the same time. And working on both sides at the same time is really how you, you know, you really make a big difference. It's like, how can you cut your expenses and make a side, you know, get a side hustle or whatever to help take you to the next level, not just how do I go get a big raise at work. And so when you're looking at your business that way too, where it's like, how do I slow down churn? How do I close more deals? How do I upsell the customers I have now? How do I how do I not value, but explain raising prices? Am I bringing more value? Am I swapping out expert leaders with amateur leaders and then telling the clients to deal with that? You know, what are all the different things that you're doing? And I think, you know, in an Amazon way, like for me at least, there's all of these tools and softwares that kind of help you have these looks, like these dashboards that you need to be able to make these decisions. And I think in an agency, where I'm even at transparently, is working to get those kinds of dashboards where I can see the data in trend lines and see the data as it should be. Have you done exit interviews? Have you looked over the last 3 years why you had clients leave? You know, was it economical factors? Was it the pandemic? Was it, you know, switching out account managers and personnel? Was it raising your prices? Was it competitors coming into the space? You know, was it because they had an all-in-one versus you're an a la carte and just do PPC? You know, what are all the different reasons why? These, you can't look at the data of churn or churn rate or whatever if you're not tracking all of those things.
And there's so much to track.
There's so much to track. So it really is like, I literally just had a call for my podcast today that was, you know, he's looking for a partner to help him, an equity partner or a percentage partner to come in, help him build the brand, and exit it in 24 months. So they've been building it a while. He wants to just prepare for exit. And that's something we do. And, you know, what I was bringing to the table is simply to tell them, they know how to run their business. It's going to be to tell them what to focus on and in what order to help us get there. So this has been super insightful and just, you know, a reminder to people trying to build something or build a team. I don't think it has to be an agency to be applicable today of just like, you know, what you're focusing on. If you can't figure out what to focus on, you know, get that personal trainer, in the gym. That's going to be like, okay, what are you eating? Okay. You should be doing these types of workouts. What are your goals? Okay. You want to get big. Okay. This, okay. I want to lean out. Okay. This. Okay, I want to be able to bench press 220, you know, okay, these are the things you need to be doing for the next 2 months to get there. You know, I remember trying to do pull-ups. I was always an athlete, but never like a gym rat. And until like probably the last, I don't know, six, 7 years, I go to the gym every day. But before it was more just like basketball, volleyball, all that kind of stuff. And I have really long arms. I'm like 6'3 with like, you know, go-go gadget arms. And just
Michael
remember
Phelps arms.
Yes, exactly. I can dunk, so that's cool, but I'm pretty sure it has something to do with arm length. But it was always like doing a pull-up or some of those exercises were not a pull-up, but like I guess a pull-up. What's the one? Hands are wide versus the hands are under, right? They're over.
Yeah, just a wide pull-up. Okay, it is a pull-up. They're all pull-ups. It's just different
okay,
type of
pull-up. Both pull-ups. Okay, way hard. Like a really hard thing for someone with a smaller chest, really long arms, like hadn't been lifting before. It took me a while to be able to like pump out 10 pull-ups. Like, and it was like something that was just like, I definitely had to incrementally do certain things to start building those muscles to be able to get to that point. It wasn't just like, you want to do it? Okay, go do it. It was work on an assisted machine, work on, you know, and having somebody. I also had a coach a little bit younger. I was in high school. I wanted to be able to jump an inch and a half taller to be able to dunk two-handed. And I got a coach and we specifically worked on jump drills and leg boosting drills and like explosion and things like that. And I got the 2 inches, which is crazy, you know, but if you're intentional about what you're trying to work on, you have someone telling you what you should be doing. huge difference. And something I didn't really realize until I realized how much I could help others, it opened the space for me to be able to be like, other experts can help me because there is that expertise that exists, you know.
Solomon's paradox. We can't see and solve our problems better than someone else can.
Solomon's paradox?
Solomon's paradox. Yep.
Okay. Like from the Bible, Solomon?
King Solomon, yeah.
Okay, I love it. Sorry, I was just checking what the reference was. There's a fashion designer I love named Solomon. So, no, this has been a lot of fun. I like, as a brand builder, there's been so many different stages for me over the last 10 years, from being the Amazon pro to pushing the industry to, okay, building other people's brands, okay, to building my own brands, okay, to building the agency and different focuses. And like, it starts becoming team and management and leadership and, you know, whole bunch of different skills, and you have to be good at tech, or look at, you know, operations. Building an agency is people and all of these things. So, absolutely love this topic. I think it's helpful for a whole lot of people. Definitely going to hit up Mina, tell him we met, and hopefully get to see you in LA next time I'm around.
Next time you come through, let's kick it. I mean, if you're gonna see Mina, I'll drive out to Culver City. And
say that was the Alice in Wonderland party I was at. It was one of Mina's parties. So,
he did. I couldn't make it.
See, I was there.
Yeah, Mina hooks it up. I need to do dinner with him when he's back in LA because we're in the same social circle here in LA, so we got all the same friends.
Well, so. I gotta tell you a quick story before we leave, guys, to the listeners. So I grew up in Congo, grew up in Africa. I have PTSD, hypervigilance, hyperawareness. I was kidnapped, seen friends killed, been assaulted. I've just had a lot of stuff happen to me in my life, especially younger.
That's a plot twist.
Okay. Just like, you know, it's a different upbringing, but things where like, you know, I can be triggered by certain.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. Like we do it.